somebody asked me last week that sometimes that I'd already had a couple of requests or and subject in my mind, so I put off this request for 7 days. This evening I'm going to talk on the development of faith. And the reason why I'm going to talk about this is that, one, for a person to really understand what faith means. I'm not just talking about religious faith, I'm talking about faith in a much deeper, more practical way, and how we can use faith to develop the tools and means for overcoming some of the problems in our lives. And also just how we can use this concept, this movement of the mind, which we call faith, to develop deep meditation, insight, even to the full enlightenment. All based on this understanding of faith, the practice of faith, the development of faith to its fulfillment. So it's not just an ordinary understanding of faith I'm talking about here. When I try to explain, even to myself, what faith really means, in action, with an effect, sometimes that I recall one of the earliest expressions of faith which I can remember and its results on my life. And that was the faith which is trust, confidence, when I was a small child, in the arms of my mother. As a baby, you have so much faith in the arms of your mother, so you can see the baby being carried around the shopping malls, around the streets, completely asleep, trusting so much in the care, the love, the attention of the mother, that the baby can fully relax and be at ease. Because of the faith that baby has in the arms of its mother. And I've used that as a metaphor for the meaning of faith and its effect on a person's life. When we develop faith in any area of our life, it always gives rise to a sense of security and comfort, a sense of being able to relax and be at peace, because we have faith in something. And it is one of the symptoms of our modern age, that people have faith in very little. And as a result of that lack of faith, I'm not talking about just religions, I mean faith in society, faith in goodness, faith in your partner, faith in yourself. Because of that, there is a lack of rest. There's a lack of being able to find that metaphorical comfort in one's mother's arms, where I can truly relax and be at peace, knowing that everything is okay. So this is a meaning of faith. Even in the way I've read the ancient Buddhist texts, the word for faith which I'm looking at here, for those of you who know any Pali Buddhism, it's sampasadana. It carries with it the sense of delight, delighting in something, finding happiness in something, having faith in that thing. And I've already mentioned some of the areas where our modern society lacks faith. You can see that so many problems in our society arise because people lack faith in goodness. As if there is no such thing as goodness, as if this is a dog-eat-dog world, which is all very well if you're a Doberman, but not very good if you're a Chihuahua. And unfortunately there's too many Chihuahuas in this world, and I'm not sure which particular type of dog you relate to. But I think a lot of ones think that the small chihuahuas always being barked at and bitten by the bigger dogs in our world. And people who believe it's a dog-eat-dog world, eventually you'll find one dog bigger than you who will bite and hurt and harm you. And unfortunately that many people have got so little faith in human goodness that that's the way they live their lives. And that seems to me just so sad. It does create so much pain in other people's lives, and mostly in their own. But if you have faith in goodness, that there is such a thing as goodness, and that goodness is something which gives happiness to yourself and other beings, then you're beginning to be on the right track, which will lead to a better world, both inside of you, around you, and beyond you. That faith in goodness in Buddhism is simply a faith in karma. Faith in karma, knowing that there is a difference between a good act and a bad act. There is a difference between good speech and bad speech. There's a difference between good thoughts and bad thoughts. Namely, that which is good leads to happiness, leads to harmony, leads to harmlessness in the world. And that which is bad leads to the opposite. You have faith in that, because when you look at the causes of your happiness in life, you can find that it's not just the whim of a person upstairs somewhere. It's not just chance. If you look carefully, whatever is happiness in your life, you're responsible for it. You've made it. You deserve it. It's the law of karma. You get what you deserve. Hard law, because sometimes that which is called pain, that which is called difficulty in our life, sometimes we think it's somebody else's fault. We blame our parents, we blame our teachers. I was reading in United States, a child who flunked his high school because he hardly ever studied, never did his homework, was always playing with the girls or with the boys. He flunked his exams at high school so he couldn't graduate. He took his teachers to court. He sued them for incompetence, saying and arguing, "You should have made me work harder." That's what they do in the United States, litigate. It wasn't his fault for being lazy. It's his teacher's fault for allowing him to be lazy. That's what he's arguing about. And they should have made him work harder. Isn't it the case that sometimes in our victim society, as it's called these days, we blame other people for the problems of our life, rather than looking to see if we've contributed there, rather looking to see if there's something we have done? And if we can look to see if it's something which we have done which has contributed to our harm, our own pain, our own difficulty, then we can point out our own faults and mend them, do something about it. It's hard to change another person. It's so difficult to tell someone else what to do. But can't you tell yourself what to do? Surely you have the ability to change yourself. So the faith in goodness, the faith in karma, is the faith that you can be good. The faith that you can create happiness in your life and happiness around you. When we lose that faith that we're in control of our destiny, it gives rise to the hopelessness of despair. People commit suicide because they've lost hope for future happiness. They get depressed when they cannot see an avenue to escape from their pain. They've lost their faith in goodness. They've lost their faith in karma. Their ability to rise out of the depths of pain or anguish through their own ability to rise up above the pain and to be happy in spite of all that's happened to them. In my life as a monk, I've seen many people are born and raised in horrendous circumstances, who rise up above those circumstances because they got faith in goodness, and who work hard to become wonderful people. Someone here was just handed me a script of their life, of what happened to them during the Second World War in England. They just told me as I came in here that I could use any of their story. It wasn't copyright. I hope I get it right. During the Second World War in East London, the government decided that to save the young people, they would evacuate them out to the countryside, where the bombs weren't falling. It was similar to the stolen children of the Aboriginal generation some time ago, with good motives, at least seemingly good motives, although you can question them afterwards. The five-year-old child was separated from his parents, with his older brother, sent to a distant town, I think in Wales, I think it was, sent first to a kind person, and then someone who was far from kind, who was immoral and cruel, even sadistic. The five-year-old child, separated from his brother, separated from all his family, alone, afraid, scared, beaten. Beginning of an upbringing where the person decided the only way to protect themselves was to learn how to be aggressive, violent, to be able to stand up for yourself, to be stronger than the others. And learning after much pain in their life that there was another way to live. And now a beautiful person. Or like my own father, who used to tell me about my grandfather I never knew in Liverpool, in the north of England, who before the Second World War in England used to come home every night, drunk, used to take off his belt and beat whatever child who came across his path, and then set up beating up his mother, his wife, my grandmother. My father saw that. And he decided that when he had children, he wasn't going to do the same, which was a very lucky decision for me. Even though he'd been hurt and traumatized as a young man, as a boy, as a child growing up in poverty in Liverpool, he decided that he wasn't going to be a victim of child abuse. He had faith in goodness, the faith in the ability that even with such a very hard upbringing, he could still become a good person, and he could still create goodness in the world. There's many other stories, which I'm sure that you know of a person who, because of their faith in something better, no matter what happens to them, could rise above. Karma is something which gives you full opportunity, no matter what happens to you in your life, no matter what difficulties and problems in your life, if you know the law of karma and you have faith in that law, you know you can use whatever happens to you as fertilizer for your heart. It's what I used to call it. Any difficulties and problems, any pain, any disappointment, fertilizer, that's what it is. Dung. Dung is offensive. It's problematical. It's smelly. If you get any dung on your hands, you wash them off, and sometimes it takes a lot of soap to wash off the smell. It's excellent for growing flowers and trees. The more smelly it is, the more powerful it is. The more painful and difficult your experience, the more you can learn from it. This is how the Buddha taught the law of karma. It's difficult when you have painful experiences in the past, when you've been abused physically, sexually, when you've been disadvantaged. But I'm sure that you can understand, you can have faith, that even so, it is possible. Other people do it. Why can't we? When we have faith in that goodness, it gives us hope no matter what we have to deal with in life. It gives us hope that we can succeed for our own happiness, but not just for our own happiness, for other people's happiness as well. Every time a person rises from difficulty, surmounts what other people think is impossible, to the faith in goodness, the faith in karma, the faith that they are in control, that they can make happiness occur through their own hard effort, through the leaping of their wisdom to forgive. If you can forgive faults, you're wise. One of the stories I haven't told for a while. One of the people who used to come to our meditation group came to me one day, said she had a problem. Big problem. Huge problem. She found her husband had been sexually abusing her two 11-year-old twins, boy and girl. That's called a big problem. Those of you who think you've got problems, that's huge. She loved her husband. It was a great shock that he could do such a thing. Eventually he was sent to jail. The family was sort of split. But fortunately, because she'd been a meditator, because she had faith in goodness, she could forgive. She forgave her husband for the abuse which he had done to her own children. She forgave very quickly. It was a very beautiful thing she did. Because she forgave quickly, she had a lot of trouble with the psychiatrist, or the psychologist, the counselor. As many of you might know, anyone in that situation, it's mandatory you've got to go and see a counselor. And she was going to see this counselor. The counselor said, "You're angry at him, aren't you?" He said, "No, I'm not angry at him, I've forgiven him." "You're angry, aren't you?" He said, "No, I've forgiven him." "You're in denial." If you don't agree with the counselor, it's called denial. And eventually she came to complain to me about her counselor, and I had to write a letter about Buddhist ethics and Buddhist ideas of karma and how they let go. And she did let go, and eventually the counselor accepted that. Because she let go, her children let go. Because she forgave, she helped her children forgive. Children follow parents. One of the parents is angry, really angry, at their partner. The children will follow. They look to the parents. They imitate them. And so this was a case where this beautiful lady, in difficult situations, her life could have been completely collapsed. She could have been traumatized for the rest of her life. She could have been scarred emotionally and with her children as well. But she chose to have faith in goodness, to forgive. That's what forgiveness means, to have faith in goodness. But no matter what that person has done, that there's something more to them than their crime, than their abuse, than their hurt. That faith in the goodness of another human being is so important, because sometimes there's been people which have hurt you, have abused you, have treated you violently, cruelly. And sometimes if we can't see any goodness in that person, there's no way we can forgive. There's no way we can let go. We want revenge. And that revenge will burn us and hurt us. In the same way that revenge keeps the wars of the world going between ethnic communities, between nations, between people who spend eternity settling their scores. And the balance is never settled. On and on and on. When we have the faith in the goodness of another person, we can say, "I can see something in my enemy. My worst enemy, the one who's hurt and abused me, I can see something in them which is a seed of goodness enough for me to forgive. To see that there's more to them than that terrible act which they have committed. Only when you can see some goodness in the other person can you truly forgive." And once you see that goodness in that other person, when you have faith in that goodness, we have faith that a person can change. Then people do change. People do become good. When I used to go into the prisons of Western Australia, I learned very quickly not to go in a prison and see criminals, but to see human beings. To be able to go in there and not to see a murderer or a rapist, but to see a human being. To see someone who is more than the crime they committed. Unfortunately, that those people in jails who have committed bad crimes are reminded of that act every moment of their lives by the bars on their walls, by the uniform of the prison officers, by the fact that they know they're in jail, always reminded of that one stupid, selfish, cruel act. Or many acts. But when I went into those jails, I made a point of not looking at the prisoner, but looking at the human being. To see that there was, even in the worst offenders, something good looking at that, noticing it, and it's amazing how that grew. And even this morning, just one of the monks went into the local prison last night to teach some meditation. And they gave some fruit, they gave some bananas, and I ate a banana from a prisoner this morning, for my dana, for my meal. It tasted delicious, because I knew where it came from. Even a prisoner making merit with a monk, offering them a banana, that really made me happy. A very delicious banana, when I knew how hard it was for them to give that to the monks. When you got faith in that goodness, it's amazing how it grows. And some of those prisoners have been in jail because you have faith in that goodness, you forgive them, because you trust them. Isn't that what faith is? Trust. It's amazing how often they live up to that trust. And that's with prisoners in a jail. What about your partner, your children, your parents? Back to your partner. Have you got faith in them? Full trust. Trust enough to forgive their faults. Have faith in their goodness. This is where we learn how to live with other people. If you don't have faith in the goodness of your partner, then you will not be able to live with them. Sometimes people make mistakes. Hands up those who've never made mistakes. I've made my mistakes in the past. One day they might write a biography of me, and they'd see all my mistakes. You know, they tell all biographies whenever I come famous. That's one of the problems of being famous. All my mistakes. I think I told a lot of them here anyway. I always tell them it's nice for a laugh. But anyway, everyone has made mistakes. But if you focus on those mistakes, you see nothing else. Then you get depressed, lose your self-esteem, you've got no faith in yourself. Focus on anything good in yourself restores your faith in yourself and other human beings. If you focus on that faith, you trust, you can live with another person. How about having faith in yourself? To be able to trust in yourself. To be able to forgive your faults. Because you, like a prisoner in a jail, have also done many crimes. The only difference between you and the prisoners, they got caught, you didn't. Because of that, if we can have that faith and confidence in ourselves, we can trust ourselves, then that's when we start to grow. That's when we can start to feel at peace with ourselves. That's when we can start to have a sense of loving kindness towards ourselves. A sense of self-acceptance. Then maybe, just like a child in the mother's arms, can completely relax and be at peace. Then perhaps that you, in your own arms, can completely relax and be at peace, having full confidence in yourself. That self-confidence has been used by American motivational psychologists to make a lot of money. So anyone of you who's looking for a job, just listen to this talk very carefully and just repeat it on the circuit and you can make thousands. Have confidence in yourself. Faith in yourself. That's all they're saying. It's amazing what you can do. It's like riding a bicycle. You remember the time when you rode a bicycle for the first time because you thought you were going to fall off? You did. It's a lack of confidence. After a while you can get on a bicycle and go pedaling down the roads without falling off because you're so confident you don't fall off. Most of the time anyway. But it's certainly a lack of confidence which makes you fall off. In the same way, whatever you do in this world, whether it's studying for a degree or working in an office or even being a senior monk and giving a talk in front of 300, 400 people every Friday night, confidence is what makes you succeed or which makes you fail if you've got lack of it. I was even told as a young man courting girls If you're confident, then you get lots of girlfriends. If you lack your confidence, you're wasting your time, mate. Isn't that true? Confidence. But of course, here we're not talking about worldly things. Here we're talking about that which is going to lead to your peace and your happiness. When you're going to do, well, let's just think a little bit more on worldly things. If you're going to be successful in life, develop that confidence. I told someone today who was worried about the success in their university career, get up in the morning and just say, I can, I will, it's possible. Say that to yourself, and what you're doing is you're conditioning yourself, you're brainwashing yourself to succeed. I can, I will, it will happen. If you don't do that, then what happens? You waste so many hours worrying. I'm not going to do this, it's not going to work, I'm going to fail. Just how much time is wasted worrying? That's the why confidence succeeds. Instead of wasting time worrying, you just get to the task. You put all the time in doing what you should be doing. Confidence leads to energy, leads to focus. The lack of confidence, when you give up, you just haven't got the energy. You just can't get yourself motivated. What's the point? One thinks. Confidence gives rise to energy, and because of that energy, you will succeed. Sooner or later. So the secret to success in life starts with this confidence, with this faith in your own ability to succeed. And that comes in meditation. I usually give one talk in every meditation retreat, long retreat, on faith and confidence. Basically telling the meditators that you can succeed. You can get all the way into the deepest jhanas, into enlightenment itself. Because if they didn't believe that, there would be no hope at all. The confidence which opens the doors even to enlightenment. Even there are some traditions in Buddhism which say that you can't become enlightened anymore. I'm not quite sure where this tradition originated from, but some of you may have come across it. They say for the first 500 years after the death of the Buddha that people can become enlightened, fully enlightened with all the psychic powers. After 500 years to 1,000 years, they can still become enlightened, but no psychic powers. From 1,000 to 1,500 years, they can become non-returners. The next stage down from full enlightenment, very close, but not quite. From 1,500 years to 2,000 years after the death of the Buddha, you can become a once-returner. From 2,000 to 2,500 years after the Buddha, you can become a stream-enterer, the lowest part of enlightenment. But after 2,500 years, I'm sorry, you've just missed the boat. Because the Buddha died just over 2,500 years ago. Oh, what a shame. Very close, but too late. Sorry. That's what some people teach. And because of that, that some monks even don't even try. The nuns don't even bother to develop a meditation. They think it's impossible. And because of that, there's not as many enlightened monks, nuns, people in the world. Because of that one idea, because they've got no faith and confidence, they think it won't work. Fortunately, I came from a tradition where there were living enlightened beings. So straight away, we knew, no matter what anyone said, it's possible, it can happen. You have faith. That's one of the most wonderful things about being in such a powerful tradition. In monasteries which were living in just the same way as the Buddha was living. Who was meditating in the same way that the Buddha and the great monks and nuns of that time meditated. Were living exactly the same way, doing the same thing, reaching the same results. It gave enormous faith to see things happening. When you got that faith, you know that these people can become enlightened. And you think, why not me? You have faith and confidence that it can happen. And so you develop that faith and confidence in all stages of the practice. You have faith and confidence that you can keep 5 precepts, not killing, not stealing, not committing adultery, not lying, not taking alcohol and drugs. I can do that. I can live up to that, no matter how hard you think it is. I can do it. Isn't it that one of the most important things about giving up an addiction like smoking, like alcohol, or even the worst addictions like heroin or marijuana? The faith, I can do this, is possible. And doesn't that help? Isn't that helped by seeing other people who've done it? Seeing other people who can keep 5 precepts and can be happy? Well, the trouble is, isn't it? People say you keep 5 precepts, you're going to be miserable. I remember just going to a retreat in Safety Bay and hearing a couple of the people who were going to church close by. After going to church, they partied, and one of them said to the other, "Be good." And the other one said, sort of, "If I'm good, I'm not going to have a good time." As if the only way to be happy in the world is to be bad and break all your precepts and rules of religion. But I guarantee you that that is not true. The more moral and ethical you are, the more happy you will be. The more precepts you keep, the bigger the smile. When I gave up things, and I gave up being mischievous as a young student, I became happier. When I gave up drinking at parties, I found out I enjoyed myself more. You could still joke and laugh and have a fine time. Sometimes I'd like to even tape some of the conversations we have at the monastery with celibate monks about the tea time. I'm just howling with laughter sometimes. Sometimes I'm sure people, if they came to our monastery between 6 and 7, we usually lock the doors before then, they think we're all drunk up there the way we're laughing and carrying on. But no alcohol up there, just like pure kindness, friendship and community of your best friends you trust and have faith in. And you have a lot of happiness. You have a lot of faith that keeping morality and virtuous leads to fun, leads to enjoyment. I had the idea, not quite sure about people these days, when I was a young man, that you were stupid to go to church or go to monasteries. That's boring. All the fun sort of happened at the nightclubs or the bars. I was wrong. All the fun happens when you're good. I have that much faith that goodness leads to happiness. That's why the more rules I can keep, the better. Give me more. And the same with meditation. To have faith in the present moment. To have faith in silence. Someone asked me just the other day at the monastery, "I can't become quiet in my meditation. Whenever I try to meditate, just the mind goes thinking and wandering all over the place." "Why?" they asked me. I said, "Because you haven't got faith in silence. All your faith is in thinking. You believe that thinking is important, that thinking is going to lead to solutions. You've got no faith at all that silence will lead to solutions, that silence is good." That's why a lot of people have difficulty meditating. They haven't got faith in silence as something good and worthwhile. If you truly had faith in silence, if you believed in it, if you had confidence in it, then as soon as silence arose in your mind, it would be like meeting your mother. You would be able to relax in your mother's warm, safe, secure embrace. You could relax in the embrace of silence. You would not need to struggle and move. It's your mother's holding you. You're safe. You don't need to do anything. It's because people haven't got faith in silence, they do things. They've got no confidence, so they cannot relax. A little bit of silence comes up and it's like riding a bike. You don't feel at ease, and so you wobble and fall off. The silence breaks. It's marvelous to have that faith and confidence in silence. So much so that you can rest in silence. When you rest in silence, It's like being in your mother's arms. You can just go to sleep. You can gurgle. You don't have to do anything. Your mother will look after you. Silence will look after you. Go deeper into the meditations. It needs more and more confidence and faith. The deeper you go, you're going to go to some very profound places. Sometimes people aren't sure of where they're going. Sometimes you get into bliss in meditation. And it's fascinating for me as a meditation teacher, having experienced lots of meditation myself, to see why on earth people are so stupid they haven't got faith in bliss. As soon as bliss comes up, this can't be right, and they go and move away. You get wonderful bliss happening. At last, after all these years of meditating, you're sitting here and everything happens. Wow, marvelous, wonderful. Sorry, I don't want this. It's a bit too powerful. It's a bit too much. This can't be right. To bliss out in meditation. I was very fascinated to read the Buddha, the Lord Buddha, say on several occasions, even to his monks and his nuns, monks and nuns, do not be afraid of that bliss which occurs in deep meditation. Don't be afraid of it. Make much of it. Indulge in it. Get into it. Do it as much as you like. He said it's good for you. It leads to nibbana. You have to have confidence in those powerful states of mind. Have faith in them so that when they arise, you can let go. Just like a child in the arms of its mother, you can completely relax. Don't do anything. Then you can enjoy the bliss.